Noggin Cocktails, your honest, no BS, non-salesy conversation about enterprise data management with as many cocktails as possible in hand. I'm Tim Gasper, joined by Juan Cicada. Hey, Juan.
Tim, it's happy podcast day because I love it when you do live podcasts. And finally, we've been trying to, I think the first time we had this conversation with our guest today, who's Pete Williams, a very experienced data leader, was, I don't know, over like a year ago that we want to have you in the podcast. And we finally made it happen. A year, 2 years, 3 years? Okay. The thing is that, by the way, we're starting late because we're doing this live. We're supposed to start like 5 minutes ago, but it's because my fellow colleagues here didn't have their drinks ready. So
it was a cocktail readiness break.
There we go. Anyways,
wine.
So Pete, it is great to have you here finally on the podcast. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm very well, thank you. And I've got to say, it's an absolute pleasure to finally be here with you fine gentlemen talking about data on the web rather than in person over a pint in a London pub. So
we'll do that soon too. But hey, let's kick it off. What are we drinking and what are we toasting for today? I think you're doing something live right now, Pete.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, so I spent last week in Italy. My parents live in the south of Italy. This is a grape called Susan Manuelo from Puglia. It doesn't get out the country much, but it's like a big, vibrant red, something like a Primitivo or a Zinfandel, as you might know, but better. I've got something else for you as well. Hold on a second.
Ooh. This is a surprise. This is like, by the way, I think this is the first time that we ever have anybody opening a bottle of wine.
Oh,
you got the t-shirt on.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
Tim, where's your t-shirt?
I'm sorry. I'm not going to strip right now, though. That's awesome. Pete, you got the full get up.
Like, I'm doing my best for you. I'm doing my best.
And he's actually opening up his drink right now while this is can't get more. We're going to start talking
about
it. I'm
actually jealous that you described that wine and it sounds pretty tasty. So yeah, we'll just have to partake in spirit.
I don't know what this does for my reputation. I'm drinking wine in front of you here, but cheers.
Tim, what are you drinking? What are you drinking?
Cheers. I've got a rum old fashioned.
Yeah, oh, and I actually did an Aperol Negroni. So same gin to vermouth and Aperol instead of Campari because I didn't have Campari at home. Cheers to what, Pete? What are we toasting for?
Oh, I don't know. It's always about data, isn't it? But hopefully to talk in person again sometime soon. That's what I would like.
All right. Yeah, talking about data in person. Cheers to that.
Love that. Cheers. Yeah.
All right. So let's hit the ground running, my friend. So honest, no BS, what do you mean by there is an organizational void between data and decisions?
What I mean is I think that the data transformation, as requested from the chief data officer, typically produces an outcome that isn't what people want. And we end up, I'm accelerating massively forward here, but we end up creating visibility over the decision streams that happen inside an organization, which are horizontal. You know, I've all talked about data being the DNA that joins functions together, but organizations are typically built around vertical power domains or vertical structures, you know, sales and finance and supply chain, marketing, etc. And what we do when we deliver a data transformation is we expose the connectivity between all of those things. And that's where the decisions are made, because it always takes input from everything. There's no singular decision in the business. It always relies on somebody else outside of what you're doing. And yet, that's not what the chief data officer is entitled to do. So the way I wrote this up was, no other senior leadership role is held responsible for outcomes it cannot control, judged on outputs it doesn't own, and recruited primarily for skills that address the wrong problem. And what I'm saying there is, everybody says, you're a CDO, what value are you generating? So, but I don't own the value outcomes. You know, the value outcomes are created by somebody else taking a decision elsewhere in the business. So I'm just on outputs that I can't control, and I'm recruited for a set of skills which are meant to transform that decision-making capability, but I'm not given the mandate for that. And I think mandate is probably what you talked to Kyle about last week, where what we deliver is a transformed data environment. But what the business really wants is better decision-making capability and better commercial outcomes. But those things are not closely aligned. And that's the void, is the bit that sits between the vertical ownership of the decisions and the horizontal capability that comes from exposed decision streams inside the organization. Does that make sense?
Let me step back, because I think I have a visual in my head, which actually Tim, this was the talk that we gave at Big Data London last year, which is, we say, like, data ends up kind of being in their bubble, right? They think that they're all, we're going to change the world because everything is data. Data flows to everything. But at the end of the day, you have, like, you have HR, right? You have sales and you have finance, you have customers, you have IT, you have risk and security. And then these are all basically silos, but you also said, like, they're like those power pillars themselves. And then data analytics is supposed to be something that is kind of traversing everything and supposedly connecting the dots and transforming things. But in reality, it ends up just becoming like its other pillar, which is not even that powerful as the other pillars that exist, because they really are not so focused on the outcome as delivering a very specific business value. They're supposed to support everybody else, but they end up being kind of their own style themselves and just be the best case, or I mean, well, not best case, but they end up being report takings and we'll do what you want, but not really very direct impacting. So kind of that void is, like, ideally we should be going across all those different pillars of the business, but we're not, we don't have the mandate to go do that. We don't have the, we're not given all the resources or even, I don't know. Does that make sense how I'm trying to, it's like this visual that I'm trying to kind of explain here by words, but it's hard.
Tim, will you come in on that or do you want me to lean in?
No, I'm curious to your response to that. Does that connect to what you're thinking, or is it a little different?
No, it does connect, because mandate is the key thing here. You know, I think when people say they want to become data-driven, what they want is better decisions. But what they end up asking for is somebody who can build them a data environment, create dashboards for them, basically make data visible. But making data visible is not the same as making a good decision. You know, I've done this in my past. I've been doing this for a long time, as you know. And I remember delivering a system for a major UK retailer where we exposed data. This was like 20 years ago, but we were creating, you know, Java-based screens of information pulled out of a proper, you know, style data warehouse. And what we spotted was people were logging on, but they weren't improving their performance. And the only ones who was kind of a small subset of people, and everybody had the same training. And I've seen this repeated many times, you know, what we do is we train the tool, you know, so you know, if you launch Power BI or Tableau or any of the other big tools, you know, here's a new bunch of dashboards, you're going to be data driven, here's how to use it, you know, go to this link and log on, use this report, filter to this week, slice down to this business function. And all you've done is expose the database in a colorful way. What you haven't done is in any way interpret how decisions are made inside the organization with the data you've made available. And I have found that when you challenge an organization to say, this training is not sufficient because we're not training the tool, we should be training how to use the data that you're seeing to make better decisions. It's like, well, people know what they're doing, but they don't know what they're doing. And I don't mean that to sound quite so generalistic, but quite often, decision capability is not documented inside an organization. You know, when prices go up, or typically in this sort of training, when we see a curve that goes up like this, what should we do? Is the curve going up a good or a bad thing? And how do I make it go higher? Or how do I make it come down again? Those are not the parts that we tend to lean into, document and train. They're the outcomes of making data visible. And then we kind of walk away. And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
the decisions are not trained and not documented, but the exposure of data is seen as the data transformation. It's not the same thing.
I think there's two interesting tensions here that you're talking about, and really even a third if we talk about like the CDO and what's their goal and what are they trying to accomplish. But just honing in on two, like one of them is, you know, we don't spend a lot of time as like a data organization, for example, deeply understanding business process. Usually, I know there's some exceptions, but kind of on the whole, we tend not to be focused as much on that. Right? We're usually more focused on our own pipelines and cleansing and reporting and tooling and things like that. Right? So that's kind of one thing. And then a second thing is, you know, I know that even though we've been talking for a long time about we can't just be doing descriptive analytics, we have to be doing, you know, predictive analytics and prescriptive analytics and like that, but yet still we spend 95% of our energy into sort of like counting, like in getting the counts right versus like trying to predict and impact the business. And I don't know, these tensions, like they astound me that like they're kind of obvious and they, and it makes sense. Well, of course we should be understanding the business more. We should be spending more time, you know, working with those functions to understand deeply how we can help them move the needle. And we should actually be trying to predict, like what you said, like when I see X, you know, what should I do? And if I, you know, want this number to go up, what are the things that make that number go up? I find that data organizations spend very little time in that domain. I don't know. That's my perception. Would you agree with that? Or do you see something a little different?
No, and look, let's be clear. There are some companies who are doing this very well.
Right.
But I think the majority of companies are not doing this well. Some are sufficient, some are probably poor, and some maybe have barely even started. But to your point there, I think the starting point of this, of the data transformation, you know, once the mandates come down and once the money's been signed off, it's typically to work on a single business case and try and help that part of the business expose their data such that they become data-driven, etc. The process is quite often not what's in the sort of wheelhouse of the data person. You're not typically being brought in for a process delivery. You're typically brought in for data exposure. And I find that leaning into the process, i.e. how is this decision that you're asking for this data for to be made, can be unpopular, often unpopular, almost as unpopular as saying, if I do this, what's going to be the impact on your performance? It's like, what, do I have to give you a number? It's like, yes, you do. Because the idea is that when we build this thing and you tell me we can deliver a 10x increase in sales, we should sit down and go, and did you achieve that? And if you didn't, why did you not? You know, did we build something that was insufficient? Did you not make the right decisions? Where's the gap? But typically I find there's a disconnect from the point that says, thanks for the data, we'll get on with this now. And I think that's where I start to see the mandate being diluted from we need to be data driven to thanks for showing us the data, we'll get on and do this. Because once you start challenging how decisions are made, you're the data guy, sometimes seen as the technology person, coming in and trying to tell the commercial leader how to make a decision. And that is not what they think you're there for.
Right. So and that requires a different kind of culture and a different mindset about what the data function is there to do versus, hey, I'm just going to provide you the data and the tools that you need and maybe make you take a course so that way you understand data a little better, right? Kind of on one side of the spectrum versus like, I'm going to come in here as a partner, as a peer to you, not a subordinate, but a peer to you to help you transform your business process.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think, sorry, Juan, I don't know if you're going to come in there, but this gets to the nub of why I'm saying in that sort of statement I gave, recruited primarily for skills that address the wrong problem, because what you're talking about is change and transformation. And yet so many data leaders are actually technical experts. You know, we all talk about this, you know, the job description that says strategic, but also is willing to be hands-on and, you know, knows Python and can write the code, etc. Now, you know, great that you can, but I'm not sure that the person who's sitting there writing code every day is the person with transformation and leadership experience to be able to take the organization on the process journey you're describing and on a Friday morning, knocking up some reports in Python or a bit of inquiry on the data set. You know, I just don't think that that's easy to do. And that's where it all gets muddied. So if you're recruiting somebody for the technical skills, but what you actually need is the process investigated and the data attached to a decision-making capability. Sorry, I'm punching my microphone. Those are different skill sets. And there are some unicorns who are going to sit in the middle and able to do both those things. But I think many of the technical leaders have not had transformation and leadership experience around how to influence and reconstruct the organization around the new culture and around the new decision-making processes. And so they slam into a brick wall. And I think this is typically the sort of two-year tenure thing that says, thanks for the platform, thanks for the dashboard. Oh, hold on, you're talking about changing the way we do stuff. That's not really why you're here. And then it all gets a bit muddy.
Yeah. Well, and it connects also to, you know, I was just on a call earlier today with a data leader that had been in their position for a while, and they kept on using the word foundation over and over again, right? Like, we've laid the foundation, we've set the foundation, right? It's like, Okay, well, you've been in that role for 5 years now, right? Like, that's, you're still working on the foundation, right? Like, and I think it actually, and that's not meant as a knock against that person. I think it actually connects to the topic that we have today, which is that to break from sort of foundation to transformation requires a different approach than kind of just putting all the right tools and data processes in place.
Foundations are there to be built. If you don't start building, then all you've got is a concrete patio in the garden. You know, you haven't got any structure on top of it. And so, you know, it's great to be doing foundations, but you have to build on them. Otherwise, it's just a big concrete puddle. Sorry, Juan.
No, so I mean, you know, we're taking notes here. Like, a couple of things. This is, we got to turn this into a T-shirt. You just expose the data in a colorful way. And I like to say, like, at the end of the day, it's like, I mean, a lot of data leaders or data teams and even CDOs are kind of been, their position, their mandate is like, yeah, expose the data, right? And here are the tools to go do this. And I really love how you're talking about, you're really pushing the need to be able to kind of challenge the process and saying, hey, if I'm going to go expose this data and do this work, so what? How is that going to go change things? Some people may find that kind of like, wait, I don't have to, I'm just asking you, you're supposed to deliver to me. So I think there's like this relationship that is business lines may see data teams and data leaders is like, no, you are here to give me the data that I need and that's it. And they're not truly kind of those partners. Now, when they're trying to be more partners, there could be an interpretation of that relationship. Wait, you're not going to tell me how to go change my work or stuff. But I'm like, but wait, we're supposed to be more data driven. This is how we're supposed to change things. But no, don't come here. So actually, what's really interesting is I was just having some LinkedIn kind of comments conversations with new contact, David Krause, who's a VP of data at Comcast. I want to quote him on this. We're talking about, like, at the end of the day, it's like understanding where ownership lives and understanding basically the politics of an organization. Like, I've always argued that politics are something that people interpret usually kind of a negative, right? Because we talk politics in the world and that's like kind of a negative thing. But at the end of the day, I quote him, it's the work of understanding what people care about and finding the path to that shared goal. The CDOs who do that well do not see it as playing politics. They see it as their job. But having said that, your position, P, is like, when you're doing now the job that you're supposed to be doing, other people in the organization are saying, like, that's not what we hired you for. That's not what we want you to go do this. So then you're like, so what do I do?
And that's exactly the problem. And I think this is where the mandate has to be clear. Now, I think in some organizations, the mandate that says we're going to reorient ourselves around what the data exposes, that is a data-driven transformation. But if you think a data-driven transformation is just the exposure of the database through dashboards, and then as if by magic, people will go, now I've seen this, I'm going to make better decisions. It does not work like that. That is not the outcome. I've done this too many times to know that you might get an improvement, but, you know, incremental improvement is not the same as transformation. So being able and willing to lean into that, and this, the void I talk about is where, you know, the CDO or the data leader role, whatever it's called in the organization, has got to the point where everything's exposed and we're having the happy conversation that says, this is really good, or these things are really bad. The data exposes these stuff. And unless we move beyond the sort of critique of decisions that other people are making, because what we expose is lead and lag KPIs. That's the way I talk about this. And I'm sure you've heard of this phrase before. And I'm going to use an example from like 20 years ago. I was told that as a department, we should drive sales. You know, we should drive sales. It's a common refrain. You always hear people driving sales. I don't think you can drive sales. You know, unless you're going out there and crowbarring money out of somebody's wallet, you can't force them to buy the thing that you've got. What you can do is create an environment where sales are more compelling. You know, the price is right. The product is aligned to the customer mission. You're marketing it to people who actually care about the thing in the first place and have a problem to be solved by this product. You've made sure the availability is right, and that when they come to buy it, it's available in whatever channel they want to use. You know, you're taking the right payment systems. Whatever it is, all of these things contribute to an environment where sales will be more likely to occur. But the salesperson doesn't own most of those decisions. So unless you then start attaching the lag KPI, you know, sales generated, to all of those lead indicators that you can pull the levers on, then you're just on a hiding to nothing. And if you achieve sales outcomes, brilliant, but I don't think you can say that you are the causal impact on that unless all of those other things have been properly assessed, properly having data analytics applied to them, and having a proper documented decision process that says these are the trade-offs we're willing to make, these are the tolerances, this is the context at the time, and as a result, we'll increase the price by X, but if it gets too high and margin is going to be, more than we want it to be because we're trying to control something. I'm probably saying something finest people hate. But the important point is the context in which you make that decision has to be held across all of the factors that contribute to the lag outcome, which in our example is an improved sales capability. And data exposes all of that because it goes across all of those pillars to say, I'm going to increase sales by driving marketing. So how do I measure marketing? Well, that's in the marketing department and I'm the salesperson, I don't own that. And that's what gets exposed. And unless we start putting that together in a decision system, then I think we haven't actually achieved transformation at all. We just more colorfully illuminated the conversation, but we haven't solved the problem.
So you made an interesting statement there around, and I know this is something we talked about ahead of this, is sort of like data oftentimes is sort of this horizontal layer, right? And when we really are partnering with the business, we're almost like embedding kind of data into each of the different functions and we're partnering with them. And then on top of that, right, each of these leaders, despite how data empowered or data literate they may be, right, they have their OKRs and their metrics and things that they're trying to hit, right? And so they're kind of driving what their mission is. Like, what do you think, you know, we talked a little bit about the mandate. We talked a little bit about like how the CDO is hired and the skill set that they have. What is your belief on the right model to, you know, like, obviously you can't, you know, just say you can't pass the accountability onto the data team because they're not, you know, they're not the sales team or they're not the marketing team. What does that balance look like for you? Or what does that embedded model look like for you?
So the way my thinking is going, and this is a very public way of asking two, you know, good friends and knowledgeable folk about whether my thinking makes any sense, is either value stream type analytics or, you know, lead and lag indicators. The way I'm phrasing this, I'm calling it decision systems. I think that we need to deconstruct the most important decisions that are held in the company, how they're taken, and offer solutions that support those decisions each time they're made. And I think that should have all of the insight and analytical capability that we think is appropriate and the embedded constraints that we don't want to breach. I use the example of, forgive me if I'm not allowed to mention companies, but I read about this, of Southwest Airlines and the sort of mantra that is this better for the customer? And if it's not, that operating principle is enough to stop another conversation and force the outcome. And I think all of these key decisions have an operating principle that's rooted to the strategy of the organization and the decisions it's willing to commit. So if we bubble up the most consequential decisions inside the organization, the ones that really do affect, you know, the North Star metric or the bottom line, whatever we want to talk about, and we apply this thinking to create a decision system that supports each of those, it needs to draw from all of the levers that impact it, and it should come together into a forum where we make the decision within agreed context and we talk about why we did or didn't succeed in doing it. And that can have a number of factors, which could be, you know, did we get the assumptions wrong? Was our decision model wrong? Was the market context wrong? Did we overrule something? But we shouldn't be sitting there pointing a finger and saying, you didn't achieve your target. We should be saying, why did the decision system not help us make a better decision and achieve the outcome such that we can improve the system for the next time we want to make that decision? So, you know, if we have an issue with the model, we had an execution issue, for instance, in a retail environment, you might decide to run a big promotion and then none of the signage arrives at the stores. So all of a sudden, nobody knows inside the store that actually you've got this thing going for half price. And so the execution is the problem. Or there's a conscious trade-off that, you know, we're either driving volume or we're driving a currency number. I was going to say sterling, but that'd be irrelevant to you. But we're either driving money or we're driving volume. And each of those have a different thing, because we can easily drive volume by reducing price. But by reducing price, we're, you know, impacting margin.
And we're squeezing our bottom line, right? Yeah.
So it's the thing that we actually want to prioritize here. And that's the conscious trade-off we need to make. And then the overriding thing is the guiding operating principle to say, if we can't make a decision, this is the thing which validates one way or the other. So I think what we need to build are decision systems that sit across the organization and feature the lead indicators to produce a lagging outcome that a vertical business owner is still responsible for.
So this resonates with me very much. In it's really funny that we haven't talked recently, so we are coming from it from different angles, but I think we're coming to the same conclusion. Kind of my current soapbox, and I mean, I've been saying this on the podcast and talking to a lot of folks, is like companies don't just really they have a data problem, but they really don't have, like, data is not really the core of the thing. Like, what companies have is a work problem, and I've been using this term, they have a work problem, but I'm actually now going to start expanding this. And it's like they have a work decision problem, because that, like, at the end of the day, it's like data feeds so we can get our work done, we can take our decisions, right? Analytics is so we can take those decisions or make those work, right? We have governance so we can do better work and safe work and all that stuff, right? And now AI is just a way of how we can actually do more of our work, and AI is actually going to do some of our decisions, and we're going to be automate some of the decisions that we could, like, okay, that's something that we could just, we can fully automate those decisions and stuff. We can have some sort of humans in the loop around these things and so forth, right? So and now we listen to all of this, the whole next wave of context graphs and all that stuff. Like, all that is context about how this is a decision and what context is needed because of that decision, and how new decisions are being made or new context that we should use to go help this. So I think the changing mindset here is that as data teams, leaders, CDOs, if we think about data as the center of our world, your position here, how I'm interpreting it, and this is kind of where I'm coming from it also, and from a different angle, is like work is at the center. Decision is at the center. And data is what feeds the work. AI, insights, analytics is what feeds the work. Context is what feeds the work. Like, all this stuff feeds the work. And we really need to be thinking about what is that work that needs to be done. And that work is by each business line. It's going to go across things, so forth. All right, let me stop there. This is kind of my soapbox right now. Does that resonate? How does that connect with your thinking here?
It does connect. So we've always talked about, build your platform around business use cases. I'm suggesting actually we should be building our platform around decisions. What decisions does the platform need to support? And we should prioritize by the most impactful decisions that the organization needs to make. And just to touch on your point around AI, unless we can explain how a decision is made, we should not be automating that decision, because we're just on a hiding to a spanking, I think, in a very public environment, because we won't be able to give it guidance. And if we just point it at all of our performance data for the last 20 years and say, work out why I made this decision, we haven't given it any context, to use the word of the moment. We should be documenting how we make the most significant decisions inside the organization, because then we can give that to the AI and say, using all of this collected data, these are the parameters within which we'll make a decision. Humans have done this in the past. We are now asking you to help us make this faster. And over time, we gain more confidence that the outcome is going to be the one we want. And maybe we have less humans in less loops, and we get more confident with it. That's the way these things always work and have done for 15, 20 years now. So I think you're right. But I'm suggesting that rather than focusing on use cases, which people sometimes struggle to define, we should come at it from decisions. And then if we start with decisions, we can work on a system that supports the decision. And within that decision system are the products, the data products we need to build to say, what do we need in place to surface the right information to make this decision in the right way and help everybody feel comfortable with the decision that we made? So there's
let's unpack this decision and use case. Like, this is a very profound thing you're saying. And I'm trying to say, does this mean that you can have different use cases result of a same decision, or how are you thinking about this? Because this is a flip of how we are thinking of how we traditionally talk about things.
I think it is a flip, and it's a flip. You know, I've always gone on the use case thing. You know, what do you need me to trying to do with it? But just listen to that phrase. What are you trying to do with it? Unless you're trying to make decisions, I think the question is, what are you trying to do with it? You know, because I've only got so many people. My cloud database of whatever form is costing me more and more and more every year that I subscribe to it. So I can keep stuffing data into it. But why am I doing that? What are you doing with the outcome here? And I think some people struggle to define use cases. But I'm saying they shouldn't struggle to tell me the decisions they make on a weekly basis or a daily basis or whatever the periodic basis is. And we should work backwards from what supports you to make that decision. That sounds like an easier language to me than a use case.
This requires that data people, and I know we're talking with a data lens, but I think a lot of what we're talking about may apply to AI just as much, people building AI platforms and AI teams and things like that, is that you need to get much closer to where the user is, right? And actually get in the path of decision as well. And I like how you're kind of flipping this on its head where, you know, kind of put another way, too often we build a solution, and then the use case framing comes from, well, if we had all our data in one place, or if we had a full 360 view of the customer, or if, like, and then I achieved the if, now it's a here it is, I have it, it's in my Snowflake or my Databricks or whatever, then it's like, well, what could we do with this, right? Oh, we could do them. You know, Claude will come up with 40 use cases, right? But that doesn't really matter. Like, what matters is, you know, if I am a grocery, then I've got to get the prices exactly right, or I've got to get the inventory exactly right. How do I do that better, right?
Exactly right. And you don't do that just by saying, here's the prices of everything. You do it by saying, what's the price elasticity that the market and the consumer you're aiming at will hold for this product in comparison to its competitors, which is much more important than a dashboard of prices from everywhere. Because the dashboard, you know, all the data we talked about there, scraped from other sites or provided by data aggregators, is an input to a decision system. Mm-hmm. And exposing it, all that does is say, and here are all the prices. And what we should be saying is, and you should land somewhere around here, where you're going to make some sort of conscious trade-off between volume and you know, sort of cash sales. Are you happy with that? What is it you're currently chasing? Now, I'm thinking back to one of the other retailers that I worked at, where I went in to try and launch a forecasting system. This was like early 2010s. And the whole point of the system was, leave it alone. Let the algorithm understand what the uplift will be in certain scenarios. Your job is to accurately input the scenarios. So, you know, we're going to put a promotion on. We're going to lower the price by 50%. What do we think that will do to volume? And how long will that promotion last? Or we've got an excess of this sort of stock. What could we sell it at in order to get rid of it? And people were very used to saying, well, we sold £10,000 last week. I think we should go for 15 this week. That is not a decision. That's a gut feel. And there is a space for gut feel because people do get to understand their consumer and their market, but it needs to be backed up by information. What it's better to say is, we sold 10,000 last week, but this week we're applying a promotion, but there's also a weather problem and nobody can get to the store because it's all snowed in or something like that. What's that going to do to trade? What does the forecast algorithm then tell us we're going to produce that we will sell? And the more that we mess with that, we play with the output to say, well, I don't like that number, let's trim it down a bit, the more we corrupt the algorithm for the future. But if we work on the inputs to the algorithm to make them more accurate, then the algorithm will produce a better job. And the big task was stop people messing with the back end, with the output, and start getting them to mess with the input to use their valuable knowledge so that the system has a better understanding of the baseline and then the uplift or the retrograde effect of the various things that are going to happen in the market. And these are the things that we need to get to understand. It's not to produce a dashboard and say, how do you feel about that? It's to try and make sure that we have a proper understanding of the levers that affect the outcomes and that we build our systems and our analytics and our predictive and prescriptive capabilities to be able to influence those to drive the outcomes that we want. And if we do that properly now, then we can put an AI engine on the front of it. But if we can't describe that, we should run away because we're automating something we can't explain and there's a good chance it could run away from ourselves unless we've got human. And what's the point of human in the loop? Because we're saying, let's automate this to speed up and then slow it down so people can catch up. That doesn't make any sense to me. So properly define the decision and then use AI on top of it.
Right. Or flip what you're trying to use AI for. Instead of initially being so obsessed about, you know, automating a task, right? Before you do that, why don't you use AI to help you actually analyze how work is getting done today and what the decisions are that are being done today?
What's the genuine process that's in place? Because quite often it's not the thing that's written down. It's like, I know I send this to there, but if I just drop them an email, typically things get done. It's like what always happens to technology support desks. You know, you should log a ticket, but once you've got somebody's name, you tend to phone or email that person because, you know, they seemed right last time. They got it fixed. I'll just jump ahead of the queue because I'm important. I need to get my work done. And all you're doing is making the technology support person worse at their job because they can't get to the work they should be doing because you keep bombarding them. And a lot of data teams find themselves in the same position when they get dashboard requests. You know, I just need one of these. I just need one of these. Like, yeah, but you're not in the list. Just because you've got my name doesn't put you to the front of the priority queue, you know. So we need to get away from that order-taking mindset. And if you don't mind, I'll just go on a slight excursion. I've told you about these three E's before. You know, my 3E model: establish, enable, exploit. And as I've been doing this thinking, I always felt like I was light on exploit. And I've always said, well, all the decisions are driven by analytics. You know, everybody's better informed. And really, that's dependent on the company and what their eventual outcome is going to be. But I'm increasingly realizing that the exploit part is the part where the data transformation mandate falls apart, because the establish, which is building the platform, is easy to do nowadays. You know, it might take longer or shorter depending on how many people you buy and which tools you invest in. But actually, data engineering, I don't think, is a massive challenge anymore. And it's getting easier and easier, you know, as automated tools help you do it. The enabling part is where we've all got past the platform stage and we're all leaning into the data literacy argument. My belief is that data literacy is helpful. I think it's time limited. And I think once conversational analytics becomes more of a thing, asking questions is much more natural than working out how to apply your question to a dashboard and then taking those numbers out and applying them to a decision you need to make. So I think it has a reasonably finite life. So once you've done the establish and the enable piece and you've got like a technical foundation and a biological foundation, for want of a better phrase, the exploit part is when you start to restructure your organization around the decisions you make. And that's why I think I've light on it before, because the only way you're going to actually start 10xing performance is to make decisions the principle, not data visibility the principle. One, I sense I made you uncomfortable.
There's this thing, another thing I've been kind of talking a lot and thinking about and talking with folks, and actually we talked about it on the podcast we did last week, was kind of this balance between operational and strategic. How people usually, how I see people are either operational or they're strategic. There's operational work, there's strategic work. And if I, and my point is that with AI, a lot of the operational work today is going to get automated more and more. It's 80-20 rule. 80% will get automated. There's 20% things that were people, you really have people in. So the question is that people who are operational are going to need to become either super 10x, like I can do 10 times more because I can do more operational work, or they need to become more strategic around that stuff. Now, applying this, what you just said, like establish, is like this stuff is getting automated right now, right? Yeah. The enable, yeah, it's helpful, but AI is also going to start getting that. So in a way, that establish and enablement is kind of that operational work, but that exploit is that strategic type of stuff. But that strategic is, and I think part of this, the being more strategic, is going to be about how knowledgeable you are about a particular industry, particular domain, about how to have those personal relationships and figure out how to go connect the dots across things. And that's going to be the human aspect. So I'm smiling here because I'm revisiting this. I'm like, oh yeah, that established, that enable, which is kind of your position that is going to get automated or is already or in that process. That's kind of that operational task. And this is where we need to really focus more, is on that strategic, which is that exploit, which is something that we've kind of really not been thinking that much about. And that's where we need to exploit more the exploit.
The first two phases, I think, are getting quicker. Yes. Because you need less engineers and you need less manual work. You still need to apply some intelligence and stuff, but they're getting quicker. So the speed through the first two E's, which I've always thought is a 2 to 3 year process, I think is getting quicker, depending on the complexity of the organization. And that's when your mandate smacks into a brick wall, because at that point you're saying, I've done the platform, I've got all the data in place, I can put more in, yeah, when you come up with a better idea, and loads of dashboards are being built, the organization knows how to access and use the dashboards, and we've probably started federating data teams into parts of the organization. Brilliant. What next? And I think the next part is where I think the CDO mandate runs out, and at that point there's two different ways I see the CDO going at that, because I've been in quite a negative space thinking, you know, in this world, you don't need a CDO anymore because all this data work is kind of automated. And once you've built the platform and the company knows how to access it, you know, is there really a CDO already anymore?
That was actually going to be my follow-up question to you, is like, is exploit, like if all you have to do is exploit, then why do we even have a chief data officer?
Right? Well, the D can turn into the decision. And I think is now the chief decision? No, no, that sounds too weird.
Strange you mentioned that, because I've got like a book proposition. The working title was CDO to CKO. So at what point does the chief data officer become the chief knowledge officer? And yes. I don't think anybody is, sorry, Yifuan, to control yourself. I don't think anybody in the C-suite is willing to say all the knowledge sits in that person, because what does it make the rest of you?
But hold on. But we didn't say for the information, the IT is over there.
Well, yeah. Let me tell you what happens. So at this point, there's one state of mind that says the CDO function, as we typically see it, dissolves a little bit. And, you know, you could say all the engineering stuff could move back into the CIO because it's a system-based outcome. And lots of the governance and the sort of guide rails that enable the organization to use data with confidence and with speed, that's a governance function, could sit somewhere else, could be in risk, it could be, you know, in various many places. However, where I'm coming to is I think at the third E, the CDO role evolves to become the enabler of organizational intelligence. And it's accountable for platform that supports those decision systems. It's accountable for governance and semantic consistency. So the definitions and meanings are still coordinated by the CDO. It's accountable for the analytical tooling, and it's accountable for model infrastructure, the kind of MLOps that means this decision stuff runs all the time. And then what it's providing is the decision infrastructure. So how the organization knows things and builds models, it is not owning the decisions. And it is not saying to the sales director, yeah, I think you could probably go for a bit more there, because that's not their job. But they are providing the infrastructure that enables that conversation to take place. And I think this has to happen in association with an evolved COO role. And I think the reimagined COO in my decision systems infrastructure, you know, if the COO is about how the business operates successfully, is there any more important operational capability than making good decisions? And I would like to see the evolved CDO at the third stage, the exploit stage, aligned to an evolved COO who is owning that those decision systems are accurate and that they're the right decision systems that enable the other parts of the business to be able to make good decisions, not to take their decisions for them, but to give them all of the information at the right time such that they can make those decisions. So orchestrating all of those lead levers into a place where the lag decision can be seen from the decisions made from the aggregation of those things. So the way I've called it here is the COO owns the architecture of decisions, but not the decisions themselves. And all of the functions, the C-suite functions, own the outcomes, execute within the decision systems, because we've documented how we make decisions, and then continually contribute expertise to the design decision and to the input parameters that allow us to make sure those things are producing valid outcomes that we can work on. And I think the top part of that is what I was calling the organizing principle earlier, which is if we get to a stalemate and we don't know how to complete a decision process because everybody says margin, no, volume, no, you know, promotions, no, supply chain problems, what's the single principle that allows us to slice through that and say, at the end of the day, this is the thing that we care about most, and that's the lever or the lens we'll apply to this decision process.
So one clarification thing is, you said the CDO owns the architecture of the decision of.
So I said the CDO provides decision infrastructure. So how the organization knows things and builds models, and then the COO.
The decisions and the decision inputs. Right.
Yeah.
But not the decisions themselves.
But not the decisions. And neither does the COO, because these decisions have to be made, well, typically by the outputs of the decision systems based on the criteria we apply to them from the guiding principles and from the decisions that we've documented. You know, we're chasing volume at the moment. No, we want market share. You know, whatever the guiding principles are for the various parts of the organizational pillars, that's what's embedded into the decision systems. And then they're working with those. So, just to make sure you understood that one, the CDO provides the decision infrastructure, which is the platform, the governance, the semantic layer, the analytical tooling, and the model infrastructure, MLOps essentially, which allows the organization to know things and build models. And the evolved COO role becomes the owner of how the business performs as a system and not as a bunch of individually accountable functions working essentially at the top of each pillar, sometimes at the detriment of each other, and hoping that the sum of that becomes, you know, commercial success for the organization. So the COO owns the architecture of decisions, but not the decisions themselves.
So what's interesting is that I've been using an analogy more often now, which is that as we add more and more AI, and maybe this was always the case, but I think as we add more and more AI, it's becoming a little bit more clear that this analogy can hold, that it's kind of like we're creating the enterprise organism, right? And the decision systems are the nervous system behind that, right? It has the brain, it has the nerves that can control the muscles, right? And decisions are being made and you want them enacted. And then you have a feedback loop, right? And maybe that's how this is shifting. I have two kind of follow-up questions for you. One is a devil's advocate, and then one is, do we have what we need, right? So let's start with the devil's advocate. If AI is making the data part of this more boring, right? And the sort of the plumbing part of this more boring, then who's to say that AI isn't going to make the decision part a little more boring and disintermediate us from that too? What gives you a feeling that the decision part is some combination of more protected and more valuable than the data part in an AI world?
I think the answer that I have to that is, how many people have you heard saying we need to roll out AI and take away humans? They're not doing it. Everything is, what's the human?
I hear some people aspiring to that, but they're not. It's not happening in full display yet, right? It's more conceptual at the moment.
Because we don't trust it. And we don't trust it because the data we're giving it is wrong. And we don't trust it because all we're giving it is a data mess that's a kind of a gathered together architecture of what we did in the past and say, make sense of that, and then do some brilliant stuff in the future. So we don't trust it at the moment. Now, I think you're absolutely right in that as we improve the stored data and its relevance to the decision processes, and as we improve the input parameters of decisions we intend to take, you know, I'm going to run this promotion, etc., then I think AI will start to make better decisions. And we need to come to a place where we trust that to do that more without the human in the loop. Because what is the point of speeding up only to slow down? I don't get it. We need to work out how we get confident with it and have an appropriate auditable lens to be able to stop it rather than making sure that we break it at every point and then say, well, go ahead, that looks okay. Because otherwise you might as well just do the work in the first place. To your point, the engineering part is getting faster. You know, the architecture part is getting faster. The data modeling part is getting faster because AI can do all of these things for us. And we probably want to apply a human lens to make sure it makes sense. And the decision part will go in the same way. But we shouldn't stop it doing that. We should make sure it's got the right data to make good decisions on and the right input parameters to know what we're driving for, not just make assumptions on our behalf.
And you still need that decision infrastructure, as you called it, regardless of whether it's the humans or the agents or some combination thereof making those decisions, right? And then one last thing here, and then I know we're running out of time. We'll have to do our takeaways and final three questions, which is that, quickly, do you feel like the tools that we have in place, right? The data integration tools, the data warehouse tools, the machine learning models and tooling, do we have all the tools that we need, or do you think that the decision intelligence and decision infrastructure shift, let's say that happens, does it need something different?
No, I don't think it does, actually. I think what we've got now is sufficient for what we're trying to do now. What it takes is orchestration and properly applied business knowledge to be able to make sure that what you're structuring supports the outcomes that you intended to support, and it's cognizant of the trade-offs and quality decisions that you wanted to be aware of at that time. But all of the tools we've got now are capable of doing this. We're capable of doing the data engineering, we're capable of doing the modeling, we're capable of doing the assembly into a warehouse or data lake, whatever we want to call it. And we're capable of sucking that stuff out and putting it in front of somebody and saying, this is what I think you should do next. So it will just get better, but I think it's sufficient as it stands now.
All right. Here's the honest no BS is that this is probably not the best takeaways that we did because we went all over the place. And I'm like, this was fantastic. What I'm saying is like, I need to go look at the transcripts and go read this because you really changed a lot. You did not say any platitudes, I'll tell you that. So this was very profound what you were sharing. So thank you so much. And I'll tell you that actually, like, there's a bunch of people chatting here that I kind of missed. There's actually some people messaging me live saying, hey, I was talking, like, I got multiple like live chats right now. So Pete, you strung some. This is great. All right. Takeaway time. Tim, take us over takeaways and let's do it.
Yeah, I'm just noticing all the chats too. We might need to have like a VIP. We used to do back in the day, like everybody turn on your cameras and let's have a chat, right? We need to find a way to do that again. Really fast takeaways because I know we're running out of time. So we started with honest, no BS. What do you mean that there is an organizational void between data and decisions? And you said that, you know, the CDO and their organization and what they've been driving has tended to be directed, right? It's not necessarily their fault, but directed towards a skill set that's more technical and a focus that's more around the sort of the platform and enabling the sort of the foundation. And then, you know, looking for sort of the use cases and impact that you can have with that foundation and really exposing the data, making it visible and understandable to the organization, but not necessarily what really truly is needed, which is cozying up to the decision capability that is embedded within all the different parts of the organization that tells it when you see situation X, you should do Y. Or if you have a key metric or North Star metric A, you know, how do you make it go up or how do you make it go down, whether that's good or bad, right? That's where the energy needs to go and where impactful chief data officers in their organizations need to focus as we go forward. So I'll make that my takeaway. Juan, what was your biggest takeaway?
Right. So we talked a lot about like, okay, what is the situation? Question is like, what is the right model? Decision systems, right? Deconstruct the most important decisions, how they are made and leading indicators and systems that allow them to be effectively made, right? You said like there's a mantra like Southwest, like, is this better for the customer? Like that's a way of people make these decisions around that. We discussed about the use case versus decisions, right? So what are you trying to do with, what am I doing with this? What is the outcome? You shouldn't struggle telling me what are your decisions that you make every week, and because coming up with use cases can be a harder thing. We talked about your three E's, the establish, enable, and exploit, and which you're saying that the establish and the enable themselves are things that are kind of being automated. And right now, exploit is a stuff that we really need to go focus. And that's it, the true exploit is where that data transformation happens and that mandate falls apart. Where does this all go? Well, maybe the data organization starts to become smaller. Governance could go somewhere else, or the team that or this is the CDO, the team that is providing the knowledge, the semantics, the analytical tooling, the MLOps tooling, the support for decisions. So the CDOs are providing the decision infrastructure, not the decisions themselves. And at the end of the day, this should be done in conjunction with the COO. So you've really kind of presented like not just how data transforms the organization, but just how there's like it's a meta transformation here, how the data itself needs to transform to enable the organization itself to be able to transform. How did we do?
I think you're doing well. I mean, it's been blowing my mind as I've been sitting there trying to think about this in the last 3 months, but I genuinely feel like this is I've slammed into this wall, I think, a number of times. And I think that the void that I'm trying to describe is real. It's certainly been recognized by a lot of people in the LinkedIn posts. I've been trying to make it clear. I see in the comments that some people are saying decisions are only made once, but I think decisions are repeatable or made every single week. You know, what's the price of this week? How many should I buy? You know, where am I going to market to? I think you can decompose probably 20% of decisions in the organization really affect the bottom line or the North Star. Work on those. Get those to be really humming with proper support metrics and proper processes. And I think the organization will start to perform and then start to work on the others that come after it. But you're right. The way I'm thinking about this, transformation is not just if you're going to transform around data, you need to transform around what data exposes in order to truly take the benefit of it. Otherwise, you're just improving, which is great, but who wants improvement? Nobody's going to invest millions in. Let's get a bit better.
Pete, thank you so much. So to wrap up, three final quick questions. What's your advice? Who should we invite next? And what resources do you follow?
Oh, my word. what's my advice? Do you mean about what I've just talked about?
Or about data, about life, whatever you want.
I mean, I could say invest in red wine. Because that's a joy, you know, so there's some healthy advice for you. I think in terms of people, I could probably send you the names of the people who have been feeding on my posts as I've tried to make sense of this over the last sort of 3 months as I've been sharing it on LinkedIn. I've built a list of about 20 people who really impacted my thinking, and I'm very happy to share those back and out to other people if they want to know those names as well. But there's some really good thinkers. What was your last? Who should you invite next?
What are the resources you follow?
Oh, the resources I follow. At the moment, I'm actually leaning into literature. I'm buying books. So, you know, Barry Panay's books on the eye of how to build a new data organization. And one of the biggest things I've been reading or rereading recently is a book called The Lords of Strategy, which is around how business strategy that we talk about all the time is actually a reasonably new concept. It was only invented in the 1960s, and how people were racing to catch up with something that transformed the way they went to market and wasn't just, you know, a founder with a lot of money bringing their family in and just saying, spend some more of my money next year. So go and find the book Lords of Strategy and have a read of that, because it's both a rip-roaring tale of how this happened and also insightful as to how we've all ended up in this position a little bit, you know, driven by consultants and other people saying, you must do a business strategy. It's a very useful thing, but why do we all feel that pressure, which has been repeated in, and now you must be data transformed. You know, there's a model here that serves other people as well as transforms organizations.
I want to check that out. That feels like that's probably very insightful and has some honest no BS in it.
Definitely.
Pete, cheers, my friend. This was fantastic. Like, we need to continue this soon in person. For anybody who's folks listening, we'll be at Gartner Datalytics in London, and we'll organize some impromptu happy hour, and we'll go be at a bar at a pub and have some beers, and we'll chat more about this, and I'm sure Pete will be there. So cheers, everybody. Thank you so much.